Okay, hello and welcome to Hanging Out with Bob, podcast hosted by me, Bob Edholm. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started. Well, I'm really looking forward to this podcast. My guests today are my brothers, Dave and Tom Edholm. They were guests on my very first podcast. You guys remember that first podcast, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just to refresh our listeners' memories, my brother Dave is a retired school teacher, although he does still some substitute teaching from time to time, and he lives in suburban Andover. And brother Tom is a HVAC superstar and lives in suburban Ramsey. Anyway, all three of us share a love for Minnesota sports teams, and today our focus will be on the University of Minnesota's football program during the Murray Warmath era. Warmath was head coach of the Gophers from 1954 through 1971. Dave and Tom, welcome back to Hanging Out with Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, because the Murray Warmath era at Minnesota lasted 18 seasons, we're going to split this podcast into two parts. Part one, which we're recording now, will cover the 1954 through 1962 seasons. Part two, in our next podcast, we'll cover the 1963 through 1971 seasons. So, part one, here we go. First, just some quick background on the University of Minnesota's football Gophers. Dave and Tom, do either of you have any idea how long the Gophers have been playing football? Just take a guess.
I think it's over 100 years.
Yeah, since like the 1890s, right?
I know they
have. Yeah, you're in the ballpark. The Gophers actually began playing football in 1882.
Wow.
That's 5 years before Grandpa Edholm was born.
Yeah.
Chester Arthur, with his big old bushy sideburns, was president of the United States. Let's look up his photo sometime just to see those sideburns. And the future U.S. president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or FDR, was born in 1882. But I digress. Back to Murray Warmath. According to gophersports.com, the website for University of Minnesota Athletics, Warmath was born the day after Christmas in 1912 and raised in Tennessee. He also played football at the University of Tennessee, and after graduation, he served as an assistant coach at Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Army before he became head coach at Mississippi State in 1952, okay? And then in 1954, 2 years later, he moved up north to become head football coach of the Gophers. Just a quick aside, guys. Do you know who the U tried twice to hire as their football coach, once in 1950 and again in 1953?
Bud Wilkinson.
Oh, very good. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good. Even though he had helped the Gophers, or led the Gophers to three consecutive national championships in 1934, 35, and 36, he even played Gopher hockey. I didn't know that either until I looked it up. Bud Wilkinson was doing quite well at Oklahoma at that time, so understandably, he declined the offer from his alma mater. But back to Murray Warmath, who ultimately turned out to be a very good choice. During his 18 seasons at Minnesota, the Gophers would become the 1960 national champions. That was a season highlighted by the number two ranked Gophers dumping number one ranked Iowa. Our dad went to that game, by the way. Do you remember Dad talking about that? Yeah. Okay, also that under Warmath's tenure, the Gophers earned a Rose Bowl appearance in that 1960 season, and Warmath was named NCAA Coach of the Year. And then the next season, 1961, Minnesota won a return trip to the Rose Bowl, where they defeated UCLA 21-3. And then also during Warmath's tenure, in 1967, when Brother Tom was actually alive, the Gophers shared co-Big Ten honors with Indiana and Purdue. But we'll be talking more about the 1967 season in part two of this podcast. So in both parts, or in both part one and part two of this podcast, we're going to cover these points regarding the 18 seasons of the Murray Warmath era. First, we'll give you the Gophers' record in each season, overall record, where they finish in the Big Ten, the record at home, and the record on the road. Second, we'll let you know which team won the Big Ten Conference in each season, as well as which team won college football's national championship that year. Third, we'll give you the average attendance figures for the Gophers' home games played at Memorial Stadium in each of those seasons, as well as a home game with the largest attendance season. And the reason I'm doing this, guys, is you're going to see how attendance figures change over the 18 years. Fourth, we'll tell how the Gophers did in their trophy games, Those are the games against their three biggest Big Ten rivals, which were the Michigan Wolverines, the Little Brown Jug, the Iowa Hawkeyes for Floyd of Rosedale, and the Wisconsin Badgers for Paul Bunyan's axe. Fifth, we'll give you the names of consensus or unanimous All-Americans that the Gophers play against in each season. And you'll recognize many of these names because they went on to professional football careers in the NFL or elsewhere. Sixth, because we're a Minnesota-based podcast, we'll list the names of players and sometimes coaches who might have faced the Gophers and went on to play or coach for the Vikings in the NFL. And seventh, finally, we'll list the names of Gopher players who received individual honors in each of those seasons, from the team's own MVP award to anyone who is named to all Big Ten or All-American teams. Okay, let's start with the 1954 season, when a gallon of gas was 23 cents a gallon. Dave, how did the Gophers do in their first season under Murray Warmath?
Under Warmath, in the year that I was born, they actually went 7-2 overall, 4-2 in the Big Ten, which was fourth place. They were 6-0 at home, 1-2 on the road, and they finished the season ranked number 20 in the nation.
Not bad at all. Who won the Big Ten in 1954?
It was won by Ohio State. They had a perfect Big Ten record of 7-0. They finished 10-0 overall for a shared national championship with UCLA. And then Ohio State actually beat Southern Cal in the Rose Bowl 20-7. UCLA was actually not able to play in the Rose Bowl because the Pacific Coast Conference's no-repeat rule enacted after California's third consecutive Rose Bowl appearance in 1951 came into play.
Right. And Tom, how did the Gophers draw at home in the 1954 season?
Well, they had six home games that year and averaged just a shade under 58,000 per game. Their season high for that year was 65,464 against Iowa. They ended up winning that game 22-20. So Floyder of Rosedale stayed in Minneapolis that year.
Okay. And then how did the Gophers do in their other two trophy games, Tom?
Well, just like their contemporaries, they lost them both. They're only two losses of the season, but both were shutout losses. They lost to Michigan 34-0 and Wisconsin 27-0. So they didn't retain the little brown right. jug or the axe that year.
And those were their only two losses of the year. Mm-hmm. Right, thanks, Tom. And here are the consensus or unanimous All-Americans that the Gophers faced in 1954. And just to define my terms, consensus All-American is a player who was named a first-team All-American by at least half of the recognized lists, like Associated Press, the Football Writers Association of America, and the American Football Coaches Association, just to name a few. There were about seven or eight lists in all, but consensus means that you know, half of them at least. And then a unanimous is just like it implies, every one of those lists picked it. That these guys would be the cream of the crop that particular season. So in 1954, there was one unanimous All-American that played against the Gophers, and that player was Alan Ameche. He was a senior fullback from Wisconsin. Ameche went on to play six seasons with the Baltimore Colts in the NFL. He's probably best remembered for his role in the 1958 NFL Championship game at Yankee Stadium, often cited as the greatest game ever played, at least in the NFL. Ameche scored the winning touchdown for the Colts on a one-yard run in overtime. And then the Gophers also played against one consensus All-American in 1954, and that player's name was Cal Jones, a junior guard from Iowa. We'll have more on Cal Jones later. And here are some future Vikings that the Gophers faced in 1954. First, Jerry Reichow. He was a quarterback with Iowa, but he was a receiver in the NFL. He played four seasons with the Vikings, 1961 through 1964, but stayed on with the Vikings as a scout and consultant for a total of 59 years.
Wow.
As far as I know, he's still alive, too. He's living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's 90 or 91, something like that, so... And then the other guy was Frank Gilliam. Remember that name?
No.
He was an end with Iowa, but he played professionally in the Canadian Football League. But in 1970, he joined the Vikings, where he was a scout and personnel man for over 36 years.
Hmm.
And here's a fun fact about the 1954 season. As Brother Dave mentioned a little earlier, he was born in 1954 on November 3rd. It was a Wednesday. 3 days later, on Saturday, November 6th, the Gophers played a non-conference home game against Oregon State, and won convincingly 44-6. So a nice, slightly belated birthday present for you, Dave. And there's a player from the 54 Gopher squad that we have to mention, and that's running back Bob McNamara, who grew up in Hastings, Minnesota. He was a first-team All-American that season. He was also named to the All-Big Ten first team, and he received the Gophers' annual Team MVP award. After his playing days at the U, Bob McNamara went on to play for Winnipeg in the Canadian Football League for four seasons, many of which were injury-plagued, unfortunately. But he still holds an amazing CFL record. He scored six touchdowns in a game against British Columbia, the BC Lions, in 1956. And he was a true Gopher, through and through, Bob McNamara. Big-time supporter for the U's TCF Bank Stadium, now called Huntington Bank Stadium, which opened in 2009, and which also brought outdoor football back to the campus. And McNamara passed away in 2014 at the age of 82. Okay, on to the 1955 season, when a loaf of bread was 15 cents. Tom, how did the Gophers do in their second year under Murray Warmath?
Well, in 55, they struggled quite a bit. They were 3-6 overall, 2-5 in the Big Ten to finish in eighth place. They were only 2-3 at home and 1-3 on the road.
Okay. And who won the Big Ten in 55, Tom?
Well, just like 54, Ohio State won with the record of 6-0. So the Buckeyes finished 7-2 overall and ranked number 5, but Michigan State actually had a better overall record at 9-1 and finished second ranked, number 2 in the nation that year. Ohio State was not invited to the Rose Bowl because of the no-repeat rule that we talked about before. Right. Michigan State went instead and beat UCLA 17-14.
Okay.
Oklahoma ended up winning the national championship that year.
Bud Wilkinson's team, yeah. Okay, thanks, Tom. And Dave, how did the Gophers draw at home during the 1955 season?
They drew well that year. Average attendance for five home games was 61,116. Even though they, you know, their attendance was great at home, they didn't perform very well at home. And the silver lining is that the season high for attendance was against Southern Cal, 64,074, which the Gophers won 25-19.
And how did the Gophers do in their three trophy games in 1955?
Well, it was nice because Paul Bunyan's axe came back to Minneapolis. The Gophers beat Wisconsin that year at home 21-6. Unfortunately, they missed out on an opportunity to regain the jug in a 14-13 loss at home to Michigan. And Floyd of Rosedale returned to Iowa City after the Gophers lost on the road to the Hawkeyes 26-0.
Thanks, Dave. Probably one of the biggest highlights of the 1955 season for the Gophers was their win at home over Southern Cal, because the Trojans were actually ranked number 10 in the nation at the time. Four different consensus All-Americans faced the Gophers in 1955. I'm sure you've heard of some of these guys at least. One was Ron Kramer, junior end from Michigan. He went on to play in the NFL later. Earl Morrill, a senior quarterback from Michigan State, which beat the Vikings. Which beat the visiting Gophers 42-14. Morrill, of course, went on to play 21 seasons in the NFL, both as a starter and a reserve. Norm Masters, he was a senior tackle, also from Michigan State, went on to play for a year with the BC Lions in the CFL and for eight seasons with the Packers. I have to admit, I don't think I know him. And again, this Cal Jones, who I'd mentioned earlier, he was a senior guard from Iowa. Now, if the three of us had grown up in Iowa instead of Minnesota and knew football as well as we think we do now, we definitely would have heard of Cal Jones. He's a great player, obviously, at Iowa. He went on to play for a year with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in Canada, but was killed in an airplane crash after playing in the CFL East-West All-Star Game in 1956. A tragic story. On December 9th, 1956, Jones had overslept for his scheduled morning flight from Vancouver, so he scheduled an afternoon flight to stop at Calgary and then travel to Winnipeg. Cal Jones's flight on TransCanada Airlines Flight 810 from Vancouver to Calgary crashed at Salisi Mountain, killing all 62 people aboard, including one football official and four players from the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Just a tragic story. But, you know, it sounds like he had the potential to be, you know, just a great player. He was in college, so. Anyway, there were no All-Americans or All-Big Ten honors for the Gophers in the 1955 season, but their quarterback, Don Swanson from Minneapolis, was awarded the Gophers Team MVP Award. On to the 1956 season, when a movie ticket averaged about 68 cents nationwide. Dave, after the disappointing three-win season the year before, how did the Gophers do in 1956, their third season under Murray Warmath?
They actually bounced back very well. They went 6-1-2 overall, 4-1-2 in the Big Ten, which was third place in the conference, had a much better home record, 4-1-1 and 2-0-1 on the road, and they ended up finishing 12th in the AP poll and 9th in the UPI poll.
Yeah, okay. Who won the Big Ten in 56, Dave?
That was actually won by Iowa. They had a 5-1 record. They finished 9-1 overall. Their only loss in 56 was to Michigan, which finished second in the Big Ten at 5-2. The Hawkeyes went on to beat Oregon State 35-19 in the Rose Bowl and finished the season ranked number 3 in the nation. Oklahoma won the national championship again in 1956.
Wow, Iowa really had a good year. Okay, Tom, how did the Gophers draw at home in 1956?
Attendance, it looks like it was really good. They had six home games, average attendance was 62,109. Their season high was again for the Iowa game at 64,235. Gophers got dumped in that one 7-0. Floyd Rosedale obviously remained with the Hawkeyes for another year.
And then how did the Gophers do in their other two trophy games in 1956, Tom?
Well, they got the little brown jug back with a 20-7 win on the road against Michigan, and the Axe stayed in Minneapolis because they tied Wisconsin on the road 13-13.
Those attendance figures just blow me away when I think about it. Because we remember Memorial Stadium, but I was never in there when there was even 50,000. You might have seen some games.
Right?
I saw 50,000, but certainly not 60,000.
Right. When they played OG, it would have been, autumn of 68.
Right, right.
I'm pretty sure that was a sellout, but that's one of the only times.
Yeah.
Tom, you might agree with me because we did attend the game in 77 when they upset Michigan. Mm-hmm. The game probably started off with maybe 45,000 people in the stands, but it almost seemed like more and more people kept showing up.
By third quarter, it was full. It was. Funny. It was. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Front runners back then, too. But what's curious is the 54 and 55 season, or 56 seasons, had 65,000 people there. Were the Iwegians invading Memorial like they did?
They had a lot to do with it. Yeah,
I'm sure.
To Iowa's credit, their fans travel about as well as anybody.
Yes.
And come up to Minneapolis, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
By the way, the other tie in the Gophers' 56 season was at home against Northwestern, 0-0.
Ooh.
The Gophers had been a 14-point favorite and moved the ball well in the game. They outgained Northwestern 271 yards to 142, almost 2-1. But unfortunately, the Gophers also turned the ball over on fumbles three times, including one at Northwestern's goal line. It was a heavy rain that day, and I'm sure that really, screwed things. You can imagine how that field was, too. I mean, it must have just been a mud bowl playing there. So there were not one but two unanimous All-Americans that the Gophers played against in 1956. Again, Ron Kramer, senior end from Michigan. Kramer was the Green Bay Packers' first-round draft pick in the 1957 NFL draft. He played 8 seasons with Green Bay. He was an All-Pro in 1962 and 2 seasons with the Detroit Lions. Then a guy named Joe Walton, a senior end from Pittsburgh, which lost to the Gophers 9-6 at Memorial Stadium. Walton was a second-round draft pick by Washington. He went on to play 8 seasons in the NFL, 4 with Washington and then 4 with the New York Giants. He eventually went on to become head coach at Robert Morris University for 20 seasons. I'll have to admit, I had never heard of him until I researched this. And then, again, future Viking scout Frank Gilliam, this time his senior year at Iowa, played against the Gophers. He was named a second-team All-American.
Position did Gilliam play?
Well, it just listed as N, but remember that back then, that was single platoon football. So
yes.
Maybe he was like a receiver when they had the ball, and then maybe he was a line edge rusher, or maybe he was a linebacker. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's curious. It wasn't really specify what he played, but most players are two-way
Right.
And for the Gophers, there are a couple of individual honors to mention regarding the 1956 season. Tackle Bob Hobert from Minneapolis was named a first-team All-American and first-team All-Big Ten. Hobert went on to play seven seasons for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the Canadian Football League, and his team won the Grey Cup, the CFL's version Super Bowl, in 1958. Now, here's the name I'm going to throw out at you guys. Quarterback Bobby Cox out of Olympia, Washington, not to be confused with the former Atlanta Braves manager Bobby Cox, he was awarded the Gophers Team MVP Award. And I'll be honest with you guys, I was 3 years old during the 1956 season. I had never heard of Bobby Cox until I started my research for this podcast. Had either of you guys heard of that name before?
I had heard of him, but only because of, you know, a book that Dad may have had that Gopher seasons. Okay. But I had heard of him. I would find it interesting that they recruited a guy from Olympia, Washington. It'd be interesting to do a deep dive and find out a little bit more about recruiting back then, because, yeah, that seems like a long distance for somebody to come here.
I don't think it was one of those deals where, like, he was a senior in high school and they said, would you like to play at Minnesota? I have a feeling he might have been with some other teams. That's a good question. I'm sure that a book I'm going to allude to later might explain a little bit more about his background. But the interesting thing about it was Bobby Cox was actually on the cover of Sports Illustrated on November 4th, 1957, with the caption that read, Bobby Cox of Minnesota, best college quarterback. It's like, and he's right on the cover. He's wearing one of those classic Gopher helmets with the numbers on the side.
Yeah, no face mask.
And yet, and it was just classic look. But
yeah,
honestly, I'd never heard of the guy.
But he never did win All American, or did he?
No, he didn't. He won the team's MVP award. I think he had flashes of brilliance, but it wasn't like he could put a whole season together. So. That may be a good podcast for me just in the future, talk about this guy. He stayed in Minnesota. I think he had like a travel agency or something. And he lived to be, you know, in his late 60s. He died at the beginning of the, like, 2003. So, anyway. On to the 1957 season, when a postage stamp cost 3 cents. Okay, Tom, how did things go for the Gophers during their fourth season under Murray Warmath?
Well, they took a bit of a step back that year. They were overall 4-5, 3-5 in the Big Ten for an eighth place finish. They were 3-2 at home, but only 1-3 on the road.
Okay. And then who won the Big Ten in 1957?
I sound like a broken record here, but Ohio State won again with a 7-0 record and finished 9-1 overall. They went to the Rose Bowl, beat Oregon 10-7. And shared the national championship with Auburn.
Auburn, okay. And then how'd the Gophers draw at Memorial Stadium in 1957, Dave?
They drew well in spite of, you know, a relatively average or mediocre year. They averaged six home games, 62,954 was the average. And that was the highest average per home game in Warmath's 18 seasons.
Wow.
Season high for attendance was a game against Purdue, 64,629, and the Gophers won that one 21-17.
Okay. And then how did they do in their other trophy games in 1957?
Gophers went 0-3 that year. They lost at home to Michigan. They lost on the road to Iowa. And they lost at home to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Tradition.
Yeah. Three consensus All-Americans faced the Gophers in 1957. First one was Alex Karras, then a senior tackle from Iowa. Who went on to play for the Detroit Lions from 1958 to 1970 and was elected posthumously to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Another player, Walt Kowalczyk, a senior halfback from Michigan State, which beat the visiting Gophers 42-13. Kowalczyk went on to play 3 years in the NFL, first with the Eagles and then with the Dallas Cowboys, and then one season with the then AFL Oakland Raiders. Don't remember that name. Again, I was 4 years old. And then Dan Curry, a senior center, also from Michigan State, who went on to play 9 seasons in the NFL, 7 with the Packers and 2 with the Los Angeles Rams. There was at least one future Viking that the Gophers faced in 1957, and that was Dale Hackbart, then a sophomore quarterback with Wisconsin. He was a defensive back in the NFL and played 12 seasons there, 5 with the Vikings. I remember him really well. Number 49? Yeah.
He had kind of a tough-sounding name, and as I recall, he was a pretty hard hitter, too.
Well, I have no idea he was a quarterback, because the way he played defense, the tackles he made,
right.
Like, he's never pictured him being a quarterback. But yeah.
Very hard-nosed.
Yep. And you'll be hearing more about Hackbart as we go along the couple seasons. So, no Jug, no Floyd, no Axe in the Gophers trophy case after the 57 season. They played only one non-conference game that year, the season opener at home against Washington, and the Gophers won the game 46-7. In fact, the Gophers started out 3-0. They also beat Purdue at home and Northwestern on the road, but went 1-5 the rest of the way, and that one win was at home over Indiana. No All-American or All-Big Ten honors for the Gophers in 1957, but the quarterback by the name of Dick Larson from Minneapolis was awarded the Gophers Team MVP Award. I think Dick Larson went on to become like almost like a graduate assistant. I think he was involved with the Gophers, like when they won the national championship. He was one of those guys that just after college stayed on and helped out. So
seems like there's been a few players that are from the city of Minneapolis. It'd be kind of fun to figure out or to know where they went to high school, like what part of the city they came from.
Right. Like I tried looking up Hobart. I don't know where he was from. The only one I know about, and we'll talk to him later, is Tom Brown. I know where he went to high school. But we'll get to that in a couple seasons. On to the 1958 season, when the average yearly income was $4,650. It's fun looking up this information. I remember, you have to adjust for inflation.
Yes.
I mean, that's what literally
was season tickets cost back then.
Okay, so back to 58, Dave. How did the Gophers do during their fifth season under Warmath?
You know, that had to be just about the low water mark for Murray Warmath, because they really struggled. They were 1-8 overall, 1-6 in the Big Ten, and they finished in ninth place. Their lone victory was a 39-12 win at home over Michigan State, which actually finished last in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. They went 0-4 on the road.
Okay, and who won the Big Ten in 58, Dave?
Iowa, which is kind of a surprise. I did not realize that they were that successful, you know, at all during the 50s. But they won the Big Ten with a 5-1 record and finished 8-1-1 overall. They went on to beat Cal 38-12 in the Rose Bowl, and they were named national champions in 1958 by the Football Writers Association of America. But LSU was voted national champs by the AP and the UPI.
Those, I get the feeling that those polls probably meant more as far, because I've never heard people refer to Iowa's national champions in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poll did have them number one, but LSU is probably what you'd see listed mostly for that year. Okay, Tom, and then how did the Gophers draw at home in 58?
Well, they only had 5 home games in 58. They averaged 56,446. Their season high was again against Iowa.
Yeah.
63,726, and they got dumped in that one 28-6.
Mm. And then how did they do in their other two trophy games in 58?
Well, they were 0-4 in those as well. They lost to Michigan 20-19 and Wisconsin 27-12, both on the road.
Mm.
So 0-3 in the trophy games again.
Yeah, well, 1-8. So Okay, here are the unanimous or consensus All-Americans that the Gophers faced in 1958. And this is when I'm embarrassed. I've never heard of this guy, but I have to talk about him. Randy Duncan, senior quarterback from Iowa, a unanimous All-American. He led the Hawkeyes to one of their best seasons ever, obviously. He finished 2nd in Heisman Trophy voting.
Wow.
He lost to a guy named Pete Dawkins, quarterback for Army in 1958.
I've heard of Pete Dawkins only because he won the Heisman.
Yeah. 2nd in trophy. And Duncan was the first pick in the 1959 NFL draft by the Packers.
Wow.
He was overall the number one pick. But get this. Remember, this is 1958 or 59, I guess. The Packers offered Randy Duncan, the overall number one draft pick in 1959, a 2-year, $12,000 a year contract. But he also was offered $14,000 a year plus a $2,500 bonus to go to Canada. He took the money to play in the CFL. Again, 1959. Duncan played just 3 seasons of pro football, 2 with the BC Lions in the CFL, and 1 with the Dallas Texans of AFL, who became the Kansas City Chiefs, right?
Yeah.
I guess the reason he retired was Hank Stram became the coach, and he wanted Lenny Dawson to be his quarterback. And so Randy said, see ya.
Wow.
So he retired, and he went on to operate a successful law practice in Des Moines.
But cool.
That's a name I'd never heard of till I researched this.
Never heard of him either.
Okay, another consensus All-American, or a consensus All-American, was Sam Williams, senior end from Michigan State, the only team the Gophers beat in 1958. But Williams went on to play 9 seasons in the NFL. And then a guy named John Guzik, a senior guard and linebacker from Pittsburgh, which the Gophers beat at Memorial Stadium 13-7. A consensus All-American, he played 3 seasons of pro football, 2 in the NFL and 1 in the AFL. 3 future Vikings faced the Gophers in 58. Again, Dale Hackbart. He was a junior that year. All he did against the visiting Gophers in 1958 was run for 1 touchdown, throw for another, and pick off 3 Gopher passes as a Badger safety. And just for trivia, a guy named Jim Reese was a Gopher quarterback. He was from Long Island, and he transferred to Minnesota when Fordham dropped its football program. The second guy, now this guy I know you've heard of, Ed Schrockman, cornerback with the Pittsburgh Panthers. He played all 12 seasons of his NFL career with the Vikings. And one of his teammates in that game, not a future Viking, but we certainly will recognize the name, Mike Ditka.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Cool.
And then the third guy, which I guarantee you've heard of, is Bill Boom Boom Brown.
Nice.
Running back with Illinois, which beat the Gophers at Memorial Stadium 28-8. He played his rookie season with the Chicago Bears, but had a wonderful 13-year career with the Vikings. So again, 1958, for the second straight year, no Little Brown Jug, Floyd Rosedale, or Paul Bunyan's axe to display in the Gophers trophy case. But a couple of individual honors were awarded. A center named Mike Svensson from Minneapolis was named to the All-Big Ten first team, a center, okay? And a guard named Everett Gerths out of Dodge Center, Minnesota, was awarded the Gophers Team MVP Award. On to the 1959 season, when the federal hourly minimum wage was $1. Tom, was the 1959 season any better for the Gophers, their 6th under Murray Warmath?
No, unfortunately not. Their overall record was 2-7, 1-6 in the Big Ten for last place.
Oh, last, okay.
Yeah. Their lone Big Ten win came at home against Indiana, and they also won a non-conference game at home against Vanderbilt.
So. Okay. And who won the Big Ten in 59?
Wisconsin actually won the Big Ten with a 5-2 record and finished 7-3 overall. They got beat soundly by Washington in the Rose Bowl 44-8.
Always a good day.
Yes, always a good day. they finished the Wisconsin finished the season ranked number 6, and Syracuse, then an independent school, they didn't become part of the Big East until 91, won their only national championship in 59.
And Dave, how did the Gophers do for attendance in 59?
Well, attendance started to fall off a little bit in 59. They only averaged 51,208.
Ooh, that is a big deal.
And just to interject something, as I was looking at these stats from 59, I do recall Royce writing a column sometime in the 50s where the students on fraternity row hung Murray Warmath in effigy.
Oh.
I don't know if that was this year, but it I would guess that there was a lot of unrest among Gopher fans.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good point. Yep.
So they averaged 51,208 in 5 home games. They did have 56,000 for Michigan, and the Gophers lost that one 14-6.
And then they had their other 2 trophy games, Dave.
They lost at Iowa 33-0, and they lost at home to Wisconsin 11-7.
Okay.
So once again, they didn't have any of the traveling trophies.
No. Okay. All right, and here are the unanimous or consensus All-Americans that the Gophers faced in 1959. First one, Dan Lamphere, a senior tackle from Wisconsin. Unanimous All-American selection in 1959. Went on to play 2 seasons with the Oilers in the AFL. 2 seasons. You wonder if it was like injuries or something. Just
yeah.
Another player, Ron Burton, senior halfback from Northwestern, which beat the Gophers 6-0 that year. He played 6 seasons in the AFL with the then Boston Patriots. And then a guy named Bill Burrell, senior guard and linebacker from Illinois, which beat the visiting Gophers 14-6. A consensus All-American, Burrell went on to play five seasons with the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the CFL. And the future Viking that played against the Gophers in 59, thankfully the last time, was Dale Hackbart. In the Badgers' 11-7 win at Memorial Stadium, he ran for the go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter and then completed a pass for the two-point conversion. Oh, and he intercepted a pass in the last play of the game.
I'd love to find out where Hackbart was from, too. I would, you know, if he was a native of Wisconsin, yeah, yeah. And if so,
he's
from
still
where?
Alive. He's 86.
Wow.
It'd be fun to just talk to him. No All-American or All-Big Ten honors for the Gophers in 59, but a receiver named Tom Moe from Edina was awarded the Gophers Team MVP Award. Not exactly a fun fact here about the 59 season, but in my research, and Dave, you kind of mentioned this before, Warmath came under some serious fire after three straight losing seasons, during which the Gophers finished a combined 6-20. Fans were throwing garbage on the lawn of Warmath's home. I'm not laughing because of that. There were some people that were pretty fed up. And he was hung in effigy outside a campus dorm at the U. And some Gopher boosters were saying that the U should just buy out the last 2 years of his contract and move on. Wasn't looking good for Warmath at the end of the 1950s, was it? On to the 1960 season, the year in which Lunar McCanns for soft drinks were introduced for the first time. There's a reason for that phrase, it's always darkest before the dawn, though. Dave, here's a fun question. You get to answer this. How did things go for the Gophers in the 1960 season?
Well, after the three straight losing seasons, they made a dramatic turnaround in 1960. They went 8-2 overall, 6-1 in the Big Ten, tied with Iowa for first place, although they ended up beating Iowa that year. They went 5-1 at home and 3-1 on the road. Mm. So it was very successful.
Yeah, that was it. That is a turnaround. That's a real turnaround. And how'd they do at home for attendance, Tom?
Well, they had six home games in 60 and averaged just a shade over 57,000 per game. Their season high attendance, again, was against Iowa. They had over 65,000 there for that one. And the Gophers won convincingly 27-10. 1960 was also the last year for Forrest Evashevsky as the head coach of Iowa.
Yeah, he had a real good run. They talk about him a lot when they talk about he and Hayden Fry and Ferenz. I mean, his longtime successful coaches. Then, Tom, how did the Gophers do in their other two trophy games?
They actually did really well. They won at Michigan 10-0 and at Wisconsin 26-7.
Yeah, okay, thanks. So the Gophers won their sixth, and it's still their most recent national championship in 1960. Murray Warmath was named NCAA Coach of the Year. The Gophers finished first in both the AP and UPI polls. The voting was held prior to the Rose Bowl, which is a good thing because the Gophers lost to Washington 17-7 in the Rose Bowl on January 2nd, 1961. That's funny when you think about it. They voted championships based on regular season. The bowl games were kind of like, oh, well, it's a nice thing.
After
so. Let them go in the sun and the warmth. And but the regular season was the key rather than now. They wait till, now they actually have a national championship.
Right.
They play together.
I don't know for certain if it's still up, but that game against Washington, the Rose Bowl game is actually, at least it was a few years ago, was actually on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
You can actually see the game in its entirety. It was interesting to watch.
Well, guard Tom Brown from Minneapolis Central High School, just like Prince. Could you have more contrast in student body? Not at the same time, obviously. But he was named a unanimous All-American and the Big Ten's most valuable player. Also, along with Brown, and Tom Hall from Wilmington, Delaware, and center Greg Larson from Minneapolis were named to the All-Big Ten first team. More honors for Tom Brown. By the way, he's still alive. He's 88 years old as of, May of 2025. He was awarded the Outland Trophy, which is given to the best college football interior lineman in the nation. He finished second in voting for the Heisman Trophy.
Wow.
A lineman. And then he received the Gophers Team MVP Award. Consensus are unanimous All-Americans who played against the Gophers in 1960? Actually, none. You know, Brown was unanimous from the Gophers, but the Ohio State had a junior fullback named Bob Ferguson.
I remember that name.
He was unanimous. Tom Brown, of course, went on to play professional football for 7 seasons with the BC Lions in the CFL. He's a member of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame as well as the College Football Hall of Fame, which is all well and good, but it is wild to think that Tom Brown of Minneapolis, a unanimous All-American, Outland Trophy winner, runner-up in the Heisman, went to Canada to play football. He was drafted by the Colts and the New York Titans, later the Jets and the AFL, but he was offered more money. I can remember Dad telling us that when we were little boys. He said, you know, the CFL was actually paying more for players than the NFL was at that time.
Amazing.
Again, this is like 1960. Look how things have changed. Just wow, wow. And then you guys remember Tom Moore? He didn't play for the Vikings, but he was an assistant head coach with the Vikings in 90 and 91 under Bernsey, and then a wide receivers coach in 93 and 94 under Dennis Green. Well, he was a backup quarterback for Iowa in 1960. But in the game, the Gophers won at home 27-10. Moore kicked a field goal and an extra point. He was their kicker. 86 now, technically still involved in the NFL as an offensive consultant for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Moore. And I just want to add a couple things going off my script. But 1960 was really the first season that, well, I think you and me both got into sports. I couldn't tell you anything prior to that, but I remember Dad was so excited about the Gophers that it rubbed off on us. I mean, we just, every week. And I remember when he went to that Gopher game against Iowa.
Yes.
I just remember we were playing, you know, as little boys do, but I remember he came home and he was all pumped up because I couldn't even tell you who he went to the game with. But he just said, you know, it was packed and exciting. And it was cold that day, too. It was like in the upper teens or 20s.
I remember it was kind of a gray day,
too, as I recall. And they used to show these games, Tom, on Channel 2. They'd show the football games. I think it was maybe like one or two cameras.
Yeah.
And it was just some guy, you know, just calling the shots. But they had it on Channel 2. You could watch it if you wanted. Wow. I mean, such a different time. Such a different time. But that's kind of what got me going with Minnesota sports, I think, that season. Because the Twins came the next spring and that, but that's...
As I recall, too, that was the first heartbreaking loss that I can ever remember.
Bowl.
I mean, I was just a kid at the time, but I remember being very disappointed that they lost. And, you know, I should have viewed that as a sign of things to come.
Well, and I didn't mention it before because it wasn't a rivalry game, but they actually lost to Purdue.
Yes.
Like the second to last game after they'd beaten Iowa. I think it was close to that time.
Tell them who Purdue's quarterback was.
The future second baseman of the Twins, Bernie Allen. And Purdue wasn't even that great. I mean, the record wasn't great, but they just... Right.
They couldn't stop Bernie Allen,
yeah,
I remember.
But as Dad explained it to us, every other team that was highly ranked also lost that week. So they didn't really lose any ground, you know, as far as that goes. So,
did you remember the Uncle Joe story?
Yes.
This will come as no surprise.
He was living in Iowa, right?
He lived in Des Moines.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what he was doing, but... I mean, he had a couple of kids, kids at the time, but he ended up, he went to see the game on closed circuit TV in a crowded theater in Des Moines, and knowing our Uncle Joe, he wasn't going to shrink from standing up and cheering for the Gophers, and I think he was lucky to have gotten out of there in one piece.
Yeah. Oh, I can just... Because I know how I hate it when visiting fans come and talk trash, you know, and yeah. On to the 1961 season, the same year in which Aaron Moran, who played Joni Cunningham on the sitcom Happy Days, was born. I can't just keep giving gas prices and bread prices.
You're really digging for one on 61.
I always thought she was cute. Maybe just me. So. Well, the Gophers' 1960 National Championship season was going to be a tough act to follow, you would think. But Tom, tell us how the Gophers did in 61, their 8th season under Murray Warmath.
Well, they had another great season in 61. They finished 8-2 overall, 6-1 in the Big Ten, good for second place. Mm-hmm. They went 4-2 at home and 4-0 on the road.
Mm. And then who won the Big Ten then?
Ohio State won it that year. 6-0 record, finished 8-0-1 overall. They tied TCU 7-7 in their season opener.
That was their only blemish. Yeah. No, come on, wow.
Yeah. The Buckeyes also were named national champions by both the Football Writers Association, or by the Football Writers Association, but Bama was voted national champs by the Associated and United Press International.
So. All right, thanks, Tom. Just to show you how major college football has changed over the years, at The Ohio State University in 1961, there had been a growing conflict between academics and athletics over Ohio State's reputation as a quote-unquote football school. The result? A faculty council at OSU voted to decline an invitation to the Rose Bowl, resulting in much public protest and debate. In other words, you know what hit the fan at Ohio State. And because the Gophers finished second in the Big Ten behind the Buckeyes, they got to go back to the Rose Bowl for a second straight year. More on that Rose Bowl in a minute. Do you think today, guys, that an Ohio State faculty council, or the faculty council at any school in America with a major college football program, would vote to decline an invitation to the Rose Bowl because of concerns that they were turning into a football school? Or say thanks but no thanks to a college football playoff game? I don't think so.
No.
But back to the 61 season, Dave. How did the Gophers draw at home that year?
The average attendance was good that year. They averaged 60,322. Season high for attendance was a game against Purdue where they had 66,284. And that was the largest crowd ever recorded at Memorial Stadium. And the Gophers won that game 10-7. And the team finished the season ranked number 6 in the nation.
Okay. And then how did they do in their three trophy games?
They ended up winning 2 out of 3. They beat Michigan in a thrilling game at home 23-20. They beat Iowa on the road 16-9. It happened to be Jerry Byrne's first season as head coach at Iowa. Mm-hmm. But they lost a close one at home to Wisconsin 23-21.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I think the 1961 season was just as impressive as the national championship season, actually. For one thing, in 61, the Gophers didn't sneak up on anyone. They lost a close 6-0 game at home to Missouri in the season opener, which, by the way, featured cold, rain, wind, even snow flurries on the 20th of September.
I actually can remember that.
Yeah, in September. They lost by 2 points at home to the Badgers in the final game of the regular season. And in between those two games, they won 7 straight. First Oregon in non-conference, and then 6 games against Big Ten opponents. The 61 Gopher squad finished 6th in the nation, both in the AP and coaches polls. And just like in 1960, there were no consensus or unanimous All-Americans who played against the Gophers in 61. However, for the second straight year, Bob Ferguson, now a senior fullback from OSU, was named a unanimous All-American. Interestingly, Ferguson went on to play just 2 seasons in the NFL with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Vikings, which I did not know, don't remember. But he had some kind of head injury. He must have had concussions or something. It hampered his career. He didn't play long. And you mentioned a little bit just a moment ago, Dave, in 61. He didn't play for the Gophers, but it was the first year for Jerry Byrnes as head coach at Iowa. Byrnes, he had served as an assistant to Forrest Evashevsky from 54 to 60, and then he was head coach for 5 seasons at Iowa. And, of course, we Viking fans will always remember Byrnesy as the team's offensive coordinator for 18 seasons and 6 seasons as head coach. And I think it's pretty well understood that he is the one who invented the West Coast offense, not Bill Walsh. No matter what people like to say, he was pretty innovative. You know, he was the coach that was always up in the head in the booth, too, wasn't he, when he was coordinator?
Yep. Yes.
He's always up there. He saw things. And he made it interesting, so... Let's go back to the Rose Bowl for just a second. It was played on January 1st, 1962. I'm happy to report that the Gophers went on to beat UCLA 21-3. And they played a great game. They made up for that frustrating loss to Washington the year before in that Rose Bowl. Quarterback Sandy Stevens from Uniontown, Pennsylvania, was named a consensus All-American, the Big Ten's most valuable player, and the Rose Bowl MVP. Tackle Bobby Bell out of Shelby, North Carolina, was also named a consensus All-American in All-Big Ten. By the way, Sandy Stevens, for whom we could and I probably should record a podcast someday about his playing days with the Gophers, finished fourth in voting for the Heisman Trophy. He was also awarded the Gopher Team MVP Award. Sadly, Sandy Stevens passed away on June 6, 2000 of a heart attack. He was 59 years old. But his jersey number, number 15, was also retired on November 18, 2000. On to the 62 season, the same year in which a hamburger at McDonald's cost 15 cents. Dave, how did the Gophers do in 1962, their ninth season under Warmath?
They were successful that year. They went 6-2-1 overall, 5-2 in the Big Ten, which was good for second place in the conference. They went 4-1-1 at home, 2-1 on the road. One of those home victories included a 21-zip shutout of Navy, the first and only times those two football teams have faced each other. The team finished the 1962 season ranked number 10 in the nation.
Okay, and Dave, who won the Big Ten in 1962?
Wisconsin won the Big Ten with a 6-1 record and finished 8-2 overall. Although it's a little bit contentious about how they actually won it. I do remember a little bit about that.
Yep.
The Badgers finished the season ranked number 2 in the nation. And Southern Cal, which won the national championship in 1962, also beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl in a high-scoring game, 42-37. I actually remember watching that game. I think we lived in Heights at that time.
I was skating up at the rink and came home and watched it.
I remember it was a really exciting game.
Well, high-scoring.
I remember a player named Hal Bledsoe for the Trojans and was Ron Vanderkellen. That's about all I remember. Yeah. But I'm sure you've got some editorial comments on how they lost that game.
Yeah, there's some good stuff ahead. Good stuff ahead. Tom, how did the Gophers draw at home in 62?
Well, their average attendance for their six home games was 61,367. But again, their high water mark for that season was against Iowa, where they drew over 65,000. And the Gophers actually won that game 10-0.
Okay. And then how about their other two trophy games then?
Well, the Gophers won at Michigan 17-0, but lost at Wisconsin 14-9. Tough loss for the Gophers because both the Gophers and Wisconsin had 5-1 records in the Big Ten going into that final game of the season. Had the Gophers defeated Wisconsin in that game, they would have won the Big Ten championship.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Tom. I want to share something with you, Tom, because it's about you, but I'm coming up to this now. It's not bad. It's a cute story. When the Gophers lost that heartbreaking game at Wisconsin on November 24th, 1962, you'd been born just 4 days earlier, on November 20th. Dave, you can corroborate or correct me on this, but I believe that you and I were with Dad. Were we listening to that game? I don't think
we
it was on TV.
We were listening to the game.
Okay. And Tom, I think he came home from the hospital that day. It was a Saturday.
I'm not sure it was that day, but he had obviously come home.
It hadn't been long, though.
It hadn't been long. He's 4 days old.
From Swedish hospital that morning. Anyway, he was sleeping in his little bassinet or whatever.
His bassinet, as I recall, I thought his bassinet was in the what became the den or the dining room.
I think that's where we were listening to the game.
Okay.
I think the first 2 or 3 years of my life, that was my room.
That may have been,
Anyway, here's what went down on that Saturday afternoon on November 24th, 1962. Like you said, Tom, Wisconsin beat the Gophers 14-9 in Madison to win the Big Ten championship. They did it by scoring a touchdown on a drive that was extended after a controversial roughing the passer penalty on Bobby Bell. On that controversial play, the Gophers initially thought they were on their way to another Big Ten title after Gophers linebacker Jack Perkovich had intercepted a tipped pass by Bobby Bell with just a few minutes left in the game. Bell said after the game that he thought he had gotten his hand on the ball as he hit Wisconsin quarterback Ron Vanderkellen, but one official saw things differently and flagged Bell for roughing the passer, which gave the ball back to the Badgers. Warmath himself got an unsportsmanlike penalty after that play because he pulled on the sleeve of another official by the sidelines to ask why that penalty was called on Bobby Bell. Can't pull on the sleeve of an official, no matter what's going on. So, instead of the Gophers having the ball at midfield late in the game, that roughing the passer and unsportsmanlike penalty gave the Badgers the ball on the Gophers' 13-yard line.
Wow.
Now, and then Wisconsin then completed what was an 80-yard scoring drive with a 2-yard touchdown run to take the lead with with a minute 37 left in the game. Gophers tried to put one last drive together, but a pass from quarterback Dwayne Blaska, an Anoka guy, he was intercepted in the Wisconsin end zone. So they tried.
So I don't recall that. In other words, they drove it all the way down the field and actually was intercepted.
Threw the ball in the end zone, but it got intercepted. Wow. And that's how it ended.
Wow.
And the reason I'm rehashing that painful memory, at least from the perspective of Gopher fans, is that you, Tom, just a few hours short of being 4 days old, woke up crying just as that game was ending. Had to be because of that final result, right? Wasn't because you were hungry or 4 days old. But it's just so funny. You and I and Dad are all super disappointed, and then Tommy's just crying.
Tommy starts crying.
Well, I've been crying over Minnesota sports now for
62 years. Never changed. Yeah.
I got on that road early and I've never left it. So.
Yeah. Three consensus All-Americans faced the Gophers in 1962. There was Pat Richter, a senior tight end from Wisconsin, who went on to play 8 seasons for the Washington Redskins. And after his playing days, he was named athletic director at Wisconsin. His most famous hire, of course, was Barry Alvarez in 1990 as head football coach there. Also, a guy named George Sims, a senior fullback from Michigan State, which the Gophers beat on the road 28-7. Sims went on to play 10 seasons in the pros as a defensive back. Full disclosure, I've never heard of him either.
No.
Finally, a player named Jack Severchko, senior guard from Northwestern, which beat the Gophers 34-22 at Memorial Stadium. Severchko was drafted by the Packers in 1963, but a chronic injury prevented him from ever playing in the NFL. Severchko. I had to look at it. I got the spelling, but I thought, how do you pronounce that? It was C-V-E-R-C-K-O. Severchko. Now, despite that heartbreaking loss at Wisconsin, lots of individual Gopher players were honored in the 62 season. Bobby Bell was a unanimous All-American. He was also named first team All-Big Ten for a second straight year. Guard Julian Hook for Robbinsdale, Minnesota, and end John Campbell from Wadena, Minnesota, were also named to the All-Big Ten first team. In addition, junior tackle Carl Eller from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and senior defensive end Bob Prodzik, a Chicago guy, were named to the All-Big Ten second team. You know, I read a story where Eller, who was with Murray Warmath in the days before his former coach died in 2011 at age 98, he said Warmath was still heartbroken over that Wisconsin loss in 1962.
Wow.
Eller said that Warmath never forgave the officials for that roughing the passer penalty on Bobby Bell, and it haunted Warmath for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Back to Bobby Bell for a second. Like Tom Brown 2 years earlier, Bell was awarded the Outland Trophy in 1962 and received the Gophers team's MVP award. Bell, of course, would go on to play for the Kansas City Chiefs in the NFL for 12 seasons, including the season when the Chiefs beat the Minnesota Vikings in Super Bowl IV in 1970. He was also elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the College Football Hall of Fame. And here's a fun story about Bobby Bell. He left the U just 13 credits short of a degree to go play for the Chiefs. At the age of 74, he completed his college degree at Minnesota by finishing the 3 remaining courses he was required to take. He graduated on May 14th, 2015, more than 50 years after leaving college to play pro football. He said he did it to honor his father, who many years before had given his son a gold watch so he would never be late for class. And this is the part I love. Bell wore that same gold watch 55 years later during his graduation ceremony.
Cool.
Is that a great story?
Yeah, it's a great story.
I actually got choked up reading that. So. And that 1962 season for the Gophers, during which they finished number 10 in the nation in both the AP and coaches' polls, will take us to the end of part one of our podcast on Gophers football during the Murray Warmath era. In part two, we'll talk about the seasons from 1963 to 1971. Dave, Tom, this is fun, isn't it?
Lots of fun.
Talking about Gopher football. great to get together again with you guys, too, to record another podcast. So thanks a lot, both of you guys.
Thank you.
And again, to our listeners, thanks for hanging out with me, Bob Edholm, and my brothers, Dave and Tom Edholm. Be sure to catch part two of the Murray Warmath podcast, the former head coach of the Gophers, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And until then, bye.